Welcome to Don't Pass Me By with me, Bob Wilson, your host. I'm excited today because two of my friends are on. My friends are Robert Adanasia and Mr. Fred Velez. They're both
Gary.
gentlemen, many hats, many hats. They both know about a lot of different subjects, ranging from comedy to music to all kinds of entertainment. They've met all kinds of celebrities as well. You find them also on Facebook, but we'll get to all that. So let's start with Robert. Robert, you're A in the alphabet with Adanasia, so we'll say hello to you first. How are you, Robert?
I'm good, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Hey, mention to everybody, you put out a pretty cool book a little while back that had really stunning printed photography on nice paper. How did that book go? Tell us about that.
The book sold out. It's a book on Abbott and Costello. I wanted to do something that hasn't been done in the past. And it's Abbott and Costello's life and pitches, starting from burlesque all the way through their career until they split up.
I
And
can't
I
remember.
also,
Please continue. Continue.
I also, as you know, Bob, publish a free monthly newsletter that I've been doing for over 30 years on Abbott and Costello, and it's on our page, Abbott and Costello Forever. It's also on Who's On First newsletter on Facebook as well.
Okay, so you're all over the social media and you're an author. So that's really pretty cool. And Fred, how about you? I know you have several books out there and they range in subjects. Please tell us a little about yourself. I know most of the fans know you, and a little bit about your work.
Thank you. Well, I've got I'm a long I'm well known in the monkey fan circles. I've been a fan since the beginning, and I've got two books about monkey fandom. The first book, A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, The Monkeys from a Fan's Perspective, showcases my stories regarding my involvement with the monkeys as a fan, working with them, with Davey, working on the early monkey conventions and other events, and incorporates other fan stories in there too. So it pretty much covers the monkeys' history from the point of view of fans. And my second book is a continuation on that theme, A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You, Two, The Monkeys from International Fan Perspectives. And it covers not only my story since the first book, but also stories from fans from around the world. So we got stories from fans from England, Australia, Japan, Brazil, throughout the United States. And also besides the fans from around the world, I also have exclusive interviews with Valerie Carey's Renee, who is a very close friend of the Monkees, who is Davey's stand-in on the television series, and she's actually a co-star in the Monkeys a la Mode episode. And also Dino Kovacs of the New Monkees, who has a great story regarding the whole thing about becoming a new monkey and his involvement with the Monkees as well, and also with Marty Ross, the other member of the New Monkees. His interview was courtesy of Ken Mills from the Zilch podcast. And we pretty much cover the gamut. The first book covers, of course, the passing of Davy Jones, and the second book covers the passing of Peter Tork. And the thing is, I was actually working on planning the second book when Peter was still around, and I was hoping I would have it ready for him to see it. Unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. But I do pay great respects both Davy and Peter in the book, in my books, and I hope folks will check them out. And also, I've got a Christmas CD, which is monkey themed. It's Christmas songs done in the style of monkey songs, and it's called A Little Bit Christmas. And I'll talk about how folks can get that later on in the show.
Okay, for sure. We'll have the fans learn where they can get them. But as long as we're on it now, if people want to follow you on Facebook, find you on Facebook or social media, or order a book, where do they go?
Okay, they can find me on social media. They can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, on MeWe, and on Instagram. They just look up Fred Velez. They should be able to find me. You can order my two books, both on Amazon, both in Kindle and print editions. So just look up Fred Velez Monkeys, and you should be able to, the books should pop up. And if you want to get, if folks want to buy signed copies of my books and my Christmas CD, you can go on my website, freddypop.wordpress.com. That's Freddy Pop. That's one word, FreddyPop.wordpress.com. You can go on the Freddy Pop shop link and order the books and the CD that way. And I will be more than happy to sign them for folks.
Well, that is very cool stuff. And let's get on a little bit to these two fellows we're talking about, Abbott and Costello, but Abbott and Lou Costello. Robert, I'll start with you, and then like a tennis match, we'll go over to Fred with the question. But Robert, we'll go. We know you've had the longest running newsletter on ANC, I believe, with the Who's on First newsletter, which came out as paper, and now it is a Facebook page as well. But I want to ask you, Abbott and Costello. Lou came out, I believe, and wanted to be a stuntman. He was very good at sports. But Abbott seemed to grow up in entertainment growing up, I believe, if I'm correct, in a carnival or the circus. But straighten me out. Can you fill into the details of my general picture there? And how did these two guys start out, and how did they get together as a team?
Well, Bud Abbott was actually the expression born in a circus tent. I mean, his parents were circus people for Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus. Actually, before they teamed up, it was just T.T. Barnum Circus. Bud Abbott's father was the front man, and his mother was the bareback rider. And Bud Abbott, worked and watched everything that was going on, and he got into the theater and managing and the box office. And he saw many comedians go through, and he saw Lou Costello. He himself had his wife as a comedy act for a short while. And what happened was Lou Costello was performing at the Elkins Theater on 42nd Street in Manhattan. And Costello's straight man got ill, and Bud Abbott knew the routine, so filled in for him. And afterwards, they had dinner with their wives, and the wives suggested they team up. And sure enough, a happy wife is a happy life. They listened to their wives, and they teamed up, and the rest is pretty much history. I mean, I've been a fan of theirs ever since I was little, watching them Sunday mornings on WPIX Channel 11 with my dad and my two brothers. And, I was addicted not only to them but to comedy. I mean, in my lifetime, I had the pleasure of meeting such great comedians as Charlie Chaplin, Groucho Marx, Red Skelton. Unfortunately, I never met Abbott and Costello, but I did meet Lou Costello III, and we're still friends. Bud Abbott Jr. before he passed away, and Lou Costello's daughters, Chrissy and Patty Costello. So, I'm a ham. I'm a wannabe comedian. And if I can make people smile or laugh, either with my newsletter or, acting a little crazy on cruise ships, it means the world to me. To make someone smile, it's a vicious circle. You get the feeling right back.
Well, I got to tell you, your newsletter has given me a lot of smiles. But I have one follow-up question before I move along to Fred in our tennis match of back and forth, one question each. May I ask you one more question, Mr. Adonastia? You said
it's Robert, and you could ask me anything you like.
Well, you said that Bud was born in a circus tent. They didn't sell tickets to that, did they? I mean,
was it
like a barker outside? Come see a live birth. What was going on with
that? No, I hope not.
To a birth? I kid. I'm only pulling your leg. But let's move over to Fred there. Fred, Robert gave us a little history there of how Abbott and Costello got together, and the wives cemented that relationship. They got together because somebody got sick. Reminds me of Lou Gehrig when the first baseman got sick and he came in and he never left. But Fred, Robert mentioned WPIX and he mentioned the movies. One of the wonderful things about knowing Fred is he doesn't only give you the facts as Robert as well, but Fred takes you back to what you loved. If you love the Monkees, he brings you back to what you loved about those shows and their records. When he talks about comedians, the warmth of the memories he brings you helps you relive it. Could you tell us how you first came to get into Abbott and Costello? Were you also watching on WPAX? What were the first movies you recall seeing? And how did you feel about Abbott and Costello?
Oh, I remember that. My dad actually was a big comedy fan. He loved Abbott and Costello. He loved Laurel and Hardy. He loved the Marx Brothers. I learned to love the great classic comedians through my dad. And we used to watch Abbott and Costello on WPIX. I think WOR New York also showed some of the movies.
The Million Dollar Movie, yes.
Right, exactly. Million Dollar Movie. And it was such a great time. You know, that time is long past, which is a shame. But thank goodness we have things like TCM, Turner Classic Movies, and some other movie channels that we could
Let's enjoy. Give Sven Gulli a plug. Do you also like Sven Gulli?
Yeah. I like Sven Gulli. I've seen some of his shows. I enjoyed them. And then a lot of these classic movies are streaming, and you could rent them and all that kind of stuff as well. So they're not completely gone. You could still hopefully, you know, catch them and all that. But I remember watching the Abbott and Costello movies and the episodes of the Abbott and Costello television show, which were a lot of fun because they were in those shows. They were recreating their classic burlesque bits like 28 into 7 and of course the classic Who's on First and the telephone routine. So things like that
four,
were
four, you know, four, four.
Yes.
2-2-2-2, depending on the
2-2-2-2-2. Give me Alexander 2-2-2-2. You know.
Wow, it was cool. Good imitation. Yeah, right, I like that.
Yes, please give me Alexander 2-2-2-2 that jumped across the street. You know. But it was just watching those shows was so much fun. And I remember the movies I liked the best were like Whodunit was it's a great one.
That's a great one.
The Buck Privates movies, of course the all time classic Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, because I was a big monster movie fan too. You know, the classic Universal horror stars.
Yes.
So those movies are definitely up my alley, and I just had a great appreciation of that period of comedy. And because it was a more innocent time. It was a period. This is my little thing. This is my little motto. Because I remember comedy when it was funny. So.
Good point. I like what you said that. That's very true.
Because a lot of today's comedy doesn't sit well with me because it's too much negativeness in it, and a lot of, you know,
and often vulgar,
and very often vulgar, and they call it adult humor, but I find it adolescent, to tell you the truth.
Well spoken, Fred.
In fact, the funniest movies I've seen have been the Pixar movies, because they actually stuck to what was funny, you know. That I like something like Monsters Inc. That sort of harkens back to the classic Warner Brothers cartoons things like that, because they stuck with the concept of staying with a good story and getting as many laughs as possible. And so, you know, Pixar is like one of the companies that have kept up sort of the tradition of doing classic comedy and great stories. The reason Pixar movies have been good, but not as good as the earlier ones, like Toy Story or An Ant's Life or A Bug's Life, excuse me, or Monsters, Inc., which I think was hysterical. I found Monsters, Inc. to be like a great homage to the great Warner Brother cartoons. So, yes. But like the classic comedies will always, you know, hopefully people will see them and rediscover them. Hopefully younger generations will, you know, get fed up with a lot of the stuff that passes for comedy today and go back to the older ones and see how good they really are. I'm glad to see that there's still a lot of interest in acts, comedians and acts like Laurel and Hardy, Charlie Chaplin, the Marx Brothers, Abbott and Costello, all those great, Jack Benny, who's a huge favorite of mine.
You gotta love Jack Benny.
I adore Jack Benny, and I've had the pleasure of performing as Jack Benny in some of our recreations of the old time radio shows. So Rochester, please be sure to, you know, take out the garbage, you know. So,
we have Jack on the show as well now. Very good.
Yeah. Well, yes. So, just thinking about them brings a smile to my face. And, I really hope that more and more young people will discover how good these great comedians are, and hopefully the legacy will continue on and onward after we're all gone, you know.
I concur. Now, Robert Adanasi, I have a question for you, sir. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Please remember, you're under oath. You've been sworn in.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble now.
I'll spoil the question. Now, I don't mention yet your favorite Abbott and Costello movie, not yet, but I know we all love Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Fred brought that one up. That's one of my favorites. I'm going to ask your favorite in a minute, but don't tell us, don't divulge that information yet. But please tell us, why did you like first? What did you like about the movie Fred was telling us about there? Meet Frankenstein. What was it that made that movie so appealing that it has such, pardon the pun, universal acclaim to so many of the fans, and even people who just like movies and might not be huge A&C fans, they still love that movie. Why is it so special, Robert?
Well, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is my second favorite movie, and the funny thing is when Lou Costello was handed the script, He said, and I quote, my daughter could write a better script. He didn't think it was very good. And after they did it and his mom saw it in the premiere, his mother told him it's the best movie you ever made. And Universal was smart enough. They had the Universal sisters and they had Abbott and Costello. And they said, let's put them together and see what happens. And they did, and it was magic. I mean, they had Bela Lugosi, they had Glenn Strange as the Frankenstein monster, and Lon Chaney Jr. as the werewolf. And there's a really great line in the movie where Lon Chaney tells Costello, when the moon is full, I turn into a wolf. And Costello replies, yeah, you and 20 million other guys.
Well, that is a classic line for sure.
Yeah. But there were outtakes that you could view on YouTube where Costello sits on the monster's lap and Glenn Strange can't keep a straight face. And if you watch it close to the movie, he's biting his lip, so he won't laugh at the scene.
Well, that movie, I just can just, as many, all of us can watch it over and over and over. But you have another film that actually supersedes your favorite. It goes your favorite movie. Can you tell us what is your favorite and what about that film makes it your favorite? And do you have any anecdotes of watching it with someone special at some point in time?
Well, Bob, you know what my favorite movie is, but for the fans listening, my favorite movie is The Time of Their Lives. It was one of two rare movies where they were not a comedy team. And what makes it special to me and actually to Patty Costello, Will Costello's oldest daughter, she agrees with me. It brought out more of the acting abilities of both Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. In the movie, you can see that Bud Abbott, not only being a great straight man, he could also be a comic as well. And Lou Costello, in the movie, you will notice the pathos, the serious side, the warm side, that the Chaplin-esque side, as Chaplin had in many, if not all, of his movies. And it kind of pulls at your heartstrings at the ending, which is kind of what you were hinting at. One time I watched the movie sitting with Chris Costello, Lou Costello's young daughter, and I noticed me as well. It brought tears to her eyes because she's watching her father, you know, say goodbye to Melody Allen and walking through the stars and the clouds to heaven.
And well, it's a touching scene, yeah. And for us, for a daughter to see that, you know, fan enough, but a daughter, yeah, it's quite a moving right. scene.
Yeah, I agree with you. I totally agree with you because that is a great movie, and it does show the acting abilities of both Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. I think Bud Abbott in particular comes off very well in that movie. Little Giant is another one where they were separated, where they weren't seen. Right. And they were both excellent. And that has the classic 28-7 routine as well. So, yeah, when they were together, they were great. But when they played separate, they were just as good.
Exactly.
Now, I just want to take a second. Thanksgiving is coming up. So we want to say happy Thanksgiving to everyone and God bless. And for keeping her father's legacy alive, we say happy Thanksgiving and all good things to Chris Costello. Now back to you in this tennis match of questions. Fred, are you ready for my next wall banger of a question?
Certainly.
All right.
Certainly.
You make my day sometimes there by putting on my Facebook page and also on our Abbott and Costello Forever page. You put up some of the radio shows. I love the radio shows because many of them I hadn't heard before. So it's almost like hearing a brand new Abbott and Costello product. Could you talk in general about the golden age of radio, why the Abbott and Costello shows are so good, and maybe some fans who don't know, you can find them on YouTube for free, what they're missing out on?
Well, the thing is, you've got to remember that, correct me if I'm wrong, but Abbott and Costello really got into the public mind through radio, being guests on the Kate Smith radio show. And they were such a hit, especially with Who's On First, that eventually they got their own show. And the radio show was really good because they both had a chance to do their classic burlesque routines, but also to ad lib. You could hear they're having so much fun on those shows. And at times, they're not even looking at the script. They're just winging it through the whole thing. And, you know, where you could hear Lou says, "Where am I? Oh, here I am, page 2." You know?
Yeah.
So, those shows
were.
Yeah. And they sort of like touch on that in the movie Whodunit, because they have the whole thing set in a radio, in a radio broadcast building. And
did you say murder?
Murder.
Murder! Yeah. Oh, so, you're talking about when they turned the radio on.
Right.
And
yes.
They hear the Who's Up First.
Yeah, those two guys, they stink. They're no good.
Yeah, right.
But, that was like a little inside joke. The little fat guy, I don't like him. So, but that whole thing, the whole radio show was so much fun. And I found that there's this podcast called I Love Old Time Radio. And they do a whole week of old time radio, you know, where they have The Shadow, they have Armis Brooks, Suspense, and they end the week with Abbott and Costello on Fridays. And whenever the new episodes come up, I always post them on your page, on the Abbott and Costello pages, to friends who I know are big Abbott and Costello friends, fans, because they are a treat. They are a treat because you get pretty much Abbott and Costello unplugged, you know, more or less, because they're just, you could hear it in their voices. They're having a great time, and the audience is having a great time just watching and listening to them. And they had a good radio cast working with them. And they, you know, they do, like I said, a lot of the old burlesque routines that they were famous for, including Who's On First and Mother Fada and things like that. So
and some great guests as well. Off the top of your head, I'm putting you on the spot, but can you name some guests they had on the show? Some of them were pretty big
names.
They've had
Hal Perry with the Great Gildersleeve. They've had, I think, Joan Davis, who was in their movies. They've had Charles Laughton, who they absolutely loved, and Charles Laughton loved them. They got to do that movie, Abbott and Costello Meet Captain Kidd. And Charles Laughton, you know, he made it no secret that he adored Abbott and Costello, and he just wanted to have fun with them. So those are a couple that come to mind right now. But
yeah, Lucille Ball.
Their charity. That, I didn't mean to cut you off, but always doing their charity. They even, I believe they did a big Easter Seals campaign with Charles Laughton too, which was pretty nice.
Right. Exactly. Lou, one of the comedians, one of the people that actually loved Abbott and Costello, especially Lou, was Charlie Chaplin. There's great photos of Charlie Chaplin and and Lou Costello together. And you could see the admiration they have in both. I mean, Lou is in delight. You know, this is hero. And Charlie is like, this is... great admiration for Lou Costello, and they're clowning around and everything. So just, you know, the respect they had in the Hollywood community is amazing. I think you guys know that Lou Costello once managed Dean Martin before Dean Martin teamed up with Jerry Lewis. You know, that...
Yes.
Right.
Lou Costello also... paid for Dean Martin's nose job.
Right, exactly. And but it didn't work out. But so I think, what was it? Lou let him out of the contract?
What didn't work out? The nose job? Did they damage his nose? No, I kid. I digress.
No. No, but going back,
I'm sure they could fix the contract. Hey, Robert, are you still there?
I'm here.
You're hanging on. We got you to the end. You're hanging through with me and Fred.
Yeah, you know, I'm enjoying listening, and yeah, I don't want to interrupt, so, you know, I'm just waiting for my turn to talk, I guess.
Well, you're both gentlemen, and you're both good guests, waiting for each other to finish. There's no over-talking, which is rare on the radio, but in any event, you guys are gentlemen. But I want to ask you, Fred told us...
Wait a minute. Who are you calling a gentleman here? Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's an insult.
Who called
a
wise
guy, huh? Yeah, wise night.
Now, Robert, we just got told about the radio shows by Fred, and I'm glad he posts those and keeps them going. I know I enjoy it whenever he puts them out. But another medium, Abbott and Costello have been in the movies, we know. Now Fred has told us they've been on the radio. Robert Adanasio, the editor of the Who's On First newsletter, can you please tell us about Those TV shows these fellas did.
The TV shows that Abbott and Costello did?
Yes, sir.
All right. There's the two seasons of the Abbott and Costello TV show, which they eliminated the love interest and just pretty much put together their routines. And Jerry Seinfeld was very interested and influenced and said that his show, Seinfeld, was based on the Abbott and Costello TV shows, that it was a show basically about nothing. And, you know, they collected their routines and very little plot. And you have, you know, basically the best of Abbott and Costello. And what Fred was saying about them being unplugged on the radio is so true. But they were also unplugged on the live Colgate Comedy Hour. And
oh, yeah.
To watch them crack each other up and laughing, and it's live. It's not like cut the tape and reshoot. It was like seeing them in person. It was great, you know?
I totally agree with you on that. I mean, I've got a tape of the best of the Abbott Costello Colgate shows, and those bits are so hysterically funny. Like the one where the girl in the scene accidentally breaks a vase that was needed for a bit later, we're in trouble now. That we ain't got nothing to work with.
Yeah, bring in another vase. Oh, we're on the air. I didn't know that.
right, and also the scene where. With the necklace and the hamburger, and every time Lou's chewing and you hear the crunching, they're both breaking up and they're looking at each other, and they just can't help it. It's so much fun just to watch them go through all those routines, and they're having as much fun, if not more fun, than the audience.
Yeah.
Now, Robert, I have a follow-up question to my first question. As I watched those shows, I think they were on Channel 9 when I was a kid, for the most part. Now you can watch them on discs. But there was a big difference between Season 1 and Season 2, and I'm a fan of the Simians. So, like Fred, I know likes the monkeys, but Abbott and Costello had a monkey named Bingo. So what was the difference between the first season – of Abbott and Costello in the second? And what happened to the monkey, Robert?
Well, the monkey actually bit Lou Costello, and that was the end of the monkey.
When you say it was the end of the monkey, what did they do?
The monkey has ceased to be. It is no more. It has gone to the chorus and vestibule, and has gone to meet its maker. It is the next monkey.
Well,
Robert, what did they do with the monkey? What happened to
him? See, that I don't know, and I don't know if anyone knows if the monkey went to meet his maker or the monkey is in the Central Park Zoo or something.
Did he bite him? If you're a monkey and you get a part starring in a TV show, How hard do you have to bite somebody to get thrown? Did you like take a chunk out of this fellow? How big was the bite?
I don't know that either. But I know Chris Costello told me that her father, for some reason, didn't seem to get along well with animals. And part of my sarong, there was the seal. And there's an outtake with
Sharky the seal.
Yeah, and the seal is, I don't know, he's snapping at him. You have to see the outtake, and he says, "Cut it out, you know." And I don't know, for some reason.
Did he have like a taser or something? Did he tase the seal?
But that's a completely different monkey, you know. I did have the pleasure of meeting Mickey Dolenz before the COVID, and he was performing at Busch Gardens, and I was able to take a picture with him and get his autograph and say hello. And, you know, I like old school music, too. Problem is, when we grew up, we didn't call it old school music. But, you know,
good music.
They don't have music like that anymore. The Monkees, the Beach Boys, the Beatles, it's not the same.
No, that's the good stuff. Now, Fred, back to you, because this is a tennis match back and forth. So now I move over to you. I want to put you on the spot. Early on, when Abbott and Costello were made, I can ask both of you this question. We'll start with Fred. When the comic books first came out, the Abbott and Costello comics, I think they were published by St. John's originally, and later was it Gold Key? But when they came out...
Charlton Comics.
Charlton Comics, okay. So, Fred, let's start out. Do you have any memories of the comics? Did you collect them or like them? Any thoughts on the comics, Fred?
Not really. I think I remember the later ones that had the Hanna-Barbera, Abbott and Costello, but I don't remember.
Did you enjoy those?
They were fun. I liked the fact that the Hanna-Barbera, Abbott and Costello cartoons had the real Bud Abbott doing his own voice. Yeah. In it, and it was
I was going to go to the cartoons in a second from the TV, but just like the physical comics, like the original
I don't have any real memories of the comic books outside of the comic books of the Hanna-Barbera versions, but I remember they were okay. But I preferred watching the cartoons themselves, but I don't really have any memories of the earlier Abbott and Costello cartoon comics. Did they come out like in the 40s or 50s, something like that?
Yes, sir. Now, Robert, right. can you know more about them than I do. Can you tell us about the early comics and the later comics? You seem to know the history.
I have the complete Charlton collection of the later comics. And the difference, the main difference that I noticed was the early comics was more of their likeness. The Charlton comics was more of a caricature version of Abbott and Costello. And I agree with Fred. I like the cartoons better because Bud Abbott was the voice of Bud Abbott. And Stan Irwin played the voice of Costello. And it would have been nice if they put into the comic books and even the cartoons, which they didn't do, was maybe a play on their routines. It was more based on like Me Frankenstein, where they're being chased by monsters or creatures from another planet. And unfortunately, the Hanna-Barbera cartoons were made on a shoestring budget. It wasn't a Disney cartoon or a Pixar cartoon.
No, I just want to cut in and ask one other question in there, and then we're going to get back to Fred with a whopper of a question. So, Fred, you just get ready. No, it's not that hard, especially for you. But at that point in time when Bud got the voice in the cartoon, he'd been going through some health struggles. I know there had been talk on putting him into the wonderful film It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World, but he couldn't, I believe. What was happening to Bud physically at this time? What had happened to his health? Robert?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking Fred. I'm sorry.
We're going to get the next question. I just wanted to know, what was going on with Bud? Like, he couldn't be in It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World, you know, and he could do these voiceovers. How many parts were being, was he losing out on because of his health? And what was going on with Bud's health?
Well, Bud had a stroke, and you know, his health was not the best. And actually, there's a small one-act play. I forget the author, but I've spoken to him, and I have his book on the Bud Abbott story. And in it, he mentions that Bud Abbott got a call from, I guess, Hanna-Barbera, and they said that they were making a cartoon on Abbott and Costello, and they needed his permission. And Bud said, well, who's playing me? And I don't know if they mentioned another actor, but they told him Stan Irwin was playing Costello. And Bud says, well, I want to play me. And they were at first reluctant because they had to take several takes sometimes because his voice was not clear enough. And, you know, unfortunately, in some cartoons, they limited his talking. But just to hear him, you know, for a diehard Abbott and Costello fan, it was great. And for him to get up and go to the studio and do that kind of, you know, helped him as well. You know, cheered him up.
Well, it was great to hear him in that. And then with It's a Mad, Mad World, I take, was he considered for the script, you know? Or he just couldn't do it because of the health, but he was asked? Or was he considered for that film? I wasn't sure.
Honestly, I'm not sure either. I know the Three Stooges, Larry had a stroke, and you just see them as a cameo shot instead of, you know, clowning around with the fire engine. And so some people say that they did do that, but they cut it. I know they cut a scene with Buster Keaton.
Yeah, if I could just correct you on one thing. Larry had his stroke years later. He was still in pretty good health because he was still making movies with the Stooges at that point. But Larry he got his stroke like about 1970. And Mad Mad World was about filmed in like 62, 63. But
right. No. I thought that's why they didn't have them clowning around a little bit. But I understand that. But even with Buster Keaton, there was a deleted scene. They still have the audio portion of it. And, I mean, considering all the comedians and stuff, they could never reproduce Mad Mad World. I mean, they did a great job. You know, everybody always wants more, an encore, but it's a classic movie.
Right.
Well, it's a shame that they lost that footage of Keaton. Fred, what were you saying? I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, yeah, there was rumors. I think they wanted Groucho Marx in the final scene playing a doctor, you know, in the big scene with all the guys in the recovery room, all, you know, wrapped up in bandages and all that. And he was going to be a doctor coming in, and his last line was going to be, well, there you go, crime doesn't pay, something like a line like that. But Groucho didn't make the movie. Bob Hope, I think, they asked him. He said, no, I can't do it. He was like in the middle of one of his movies. So there were a lot of great comedians that didn't make the movie. I know Ernie Kovacs, he was originally going to play the Sid Caesar part, but unfortunately he got killed in that car crash. And Edie Adams did the movie to help pay off Ernie Kovacs' debts.
Well, they asked Stan Laurel to do the movie, and Stan Laurel didn't want to do it, and it was the scene where Jerry Lewis is driving the car. And if you notice, Jerry Lewis is wearing a bowler hat like Stan Laurel used to wear.
It's Jack Benny.
It's Jack Benny. Yeah,
it's Jack Benny. It's a scene where they're like Milton Berle and Ethel Merman are like arguing in the highway, and then a car pulls up with a gentleman in the bowler, and it's Jack Benny. He says, trouble? You have car trouble? And Ethel Merman says, yes, and we don't need any help from you. And Jack Benny looks at him and says, well, and then he writes off. So that was the scene that they wanted Stan Laurel to do.
Right.
Now, one question for each of you. After Abbott and Costello, who would your next favorite classic comedy act be and why? We'll start with Fred, and then Robert in the Wings will handle that one after you, Fred. Who would your second favorite classic comedian or comedian act be?
I would definitely the Marx Brothers. I love the Marx Brothers. And my father was a huge Marx Brothers fan, and he loved watching the reruns of Groucho's You Bet Your Life TV show. And We did with the old time radio company I was with. We did some Marx Brothers radio shows, and we also did a production of Hamlet as if it was written for the Marx Brothers, you know, with Groucho playing Hamlet and things like that. And my father came to see that, and he had such a fantastic time. And one of the last things I got from my dad before he passed away was a book on Groucho Marx that was actually signed by Arthur Marx, Groucho's son. And I still have the book, and it's one of my treasured possession. So the Marx Brothers, definitely, because my father was such a huge fan of the Marx Brothers. And I could thank my father for my sense of humor, because he introduced me to all these great classic comedians. And runner-ups, definitely the Three Stooges, Laurel and Hardy, Charlie Chaplin, Keaton, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. I mean, I have so many favorites. It's hard to, you know, to say who's – I would say, like, Marx Brothers are probably number one, followed by everybody else, close behind them. But I have such respect and admiration for these great comedians and all that. And just seeing one of their films, it always brings a smile to my face, and it's and a lot of joy. And I just never get tired of watching a lot of these things. I even, of the more recent, I love Monty Python. I think they were great. Mel Brooks, I enjoyed, Silent Movie and High Anxiety. After that, I thought he kind of lost steam. But
I hope he's not listening. Mel, we think you have steam.
Mel, I didn't mean it.
Hey, Robert, are you there? Robert Adonis.
I'm here. I'm still here.
Well, I got
you can't
two
get rid of me,
you, Robert. They're kind of tied together. Who would your All right. after Abbott and Costello? Who's your favorite? But after that, I know you met so many famous of these golden age comedians. Could you pick your favorite one that you met and describe meeting them? So we want to know your second favorite after Abbott and Costello, golden comedy act, and tell us about someone you met in person.
All right. My second favorite is Lon Hardy. And instead of explaining how great Lon Hardy is, I like to just say I agree with Fred 1,000%. I mean, all the comedians, Chaplin, Keaton, Lon Hardy, Marx Brothers, Stooges, et cetera, et cetera. As Chris Costello said, and I concur 1,000,000%, they were all great in their own right. You can't compare apples with oranges. They were all great. It's not that, okay, Lon Hardy is better than Abbott and Costello or the other way around. They were all, Abbott and Costello was great with their wordplay. Lon Hardy was, and the Stooges were great with slapstick. Marx Brothers were just completely bonkers, but they were all great in what they did. And as far as meeting people, I met Chaplin and Groucho, but the one person that was a true gentleman and had the heart of a clown was Red Skelton.
He was a sweetheart.
Yeah, I met him. I got tickets for me, my ex, and my parents to see him at Radio City Music Hall. And remember, it was around Christmas time, and I waited by the stage door. And my parents said, oh, he's inside. You're not going to see him. We're going to go see the tree at Rockefeller Center. I have a block away. And I says, you can see the tree afterwards. Don't you want to meet Red Skelton? You know, you're not going to see him. So me and my ex are waiting there, and this limo pulls up with the black tinted windows. And I says, I bet Red Skelton's in that car. And I turn, and my ex is gone. And I'm like, oh, now I'm all alone. She's out on the street in New York City opening the door of the limo. And I'm saying, I don't know her. Maybe that's why we got the. Maybe that's why, one of the reasons why we got divorced. But just
I believe that's an acceptable reason in 37 yeah, states of the union.
Yeah, yeah. But if I may continue, this huge bodyguard gets out of the car and he's shaking his finger at my ex, and I says, "I really don't know her." But then a hand comes out and hands the bodyguard a tuxedo, and then a tall gentleman comes out, which is Red Skelton. He walks over to my ex and offers her his arm. She wrapped her arm around his arm, and he escorted her around the limo to the stage door and stood there for 10, 15 minutes talking to us, signing autographs, the whole time she's hugging his arm. And then at the end, he smiled and looked down at her, and the bodyguard says, "Okay, you can let go now."
What a memory.
But, yeah, what a sweetheart. What a nice man.
Yeah. No, yeah, that was a good one. We've got about 5 minutes left, so we got a portion of time. But, Fred, tell us, who is a celebrity that you met that means the most to you? If you could only pick one of, and maybe it's a group or the group together, but who would be the one that you met that if they said to you, you could only meet one of them, which one is the one that meant the most to you, and what transpired when you met?
Well, I did meet Red Skelton myself when he played Carnegie Hall, and he was a sweetheart. But
I was there. Wait, yeah. Yeah, I saw him there too. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I guess the group would have to be the Monkees, you know, because I got to not only see them individually as solo artists, but also as a group. And the memory that always comes back to me is also the front cover of my first Monkees book, with me with a photo with all four Monkees. And how that happened was that it was taken at the 1989 Hollywood Walk of Fame ceremony, where the four Monkees got their star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And I was assigned as a part of security for the Walk of Fame ceremony. So I got to be in the theater with the four Monkees. And I knew Peter Tork and I knew Davy Jones. And Peter introduced me to Michael Nesmith, and we were talking and everything. And a friend of ours who was the photographer was taking pictures of them, and he said, "Excuse me, Fred, but you're in the photo." I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." And I start moving out. All of a sudden, I feel a hand grab my arm and pull me back in. It was Peter Tork. He said, "Fred, you are in the picture." And so I'm there with all four Monkees. And the look on my face looks like I'm saying, "I cannot believe I'm in this photo." You know, mm-hmm. And I will always thank Peter Tork for that wonderful moment. God bless his sweet soul. So, yeah, that to me is the highlight of my stint as a fan, that I had that picture taken with all four of them.
Now, as we're closing out the show, I want to thank the both of you for being here. Wish you guys and all those listening and Steve a happy Thanksgiving, and God bless you all. As Red Skelton would say, what did he say there, Robert? What was his favorite phrase?
Thank you, and God bless. Good night.
Good night, and may God bless.
God bless. Can I
ask Fred a question?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. I
heard that the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson especially, was jealous of the Monkees. He didn't care for them.
He's actually friends with Mickey Dolenz, and he knew them. He might not, maybe initially he may not have cared, but actually no, because the same musicians that played on the Beach Boys, Pet Sounds and other of their recordings, the Wrecking Crew, also played on the Monkee records. So Brian Wilson actually knew many of the musicians, including Glenn Campbell, who played on both the Beach Boys and Monkee sessions. So I think he commiserated with the Monkees in regards to the fact that the Monkees were getting ostracized for being a band that didn't play their own instruments when they did. It's just that, you know, with the confines of television, they didn't have time to record everything. So they only had time to film the TV show and then record their voices and the songs. But the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson in particular, use the exact same musicians. So it's always been something that that always galled me, that the Beach Boys got all these accolades while the Monkees were being ostracized, and they had the same group of musicians working for both groups. So I think there's a Beach Boys song called Breakaway, which is sort of like a Monkees tune that I think was written with the Monkees in mind. I don't think Brian Wilson had any animosity against the Monkees. I think he was just as puzzled that the Monkees were getting all this criticism when the Beach Boys were also pretty much in the same boat.
Right.
Well, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure to have you on. And Robert's got that Who's On First newsletter. It's also on Facebook. If you message Robert through that, he can tell you, how to sign up for it monthly for free. And he's also on the Abbott and Costello Forever Facebook page. Fred Velez can be found on Amazon with his great Monkees books. And at the start of the hour, all that information is there if you rewind to it. And this is Bob Wilson for Don't Pass Me By, saying I'm glad my two friends didn't pass me by for this show. So we say thank you, good night, happy Thanksgiving, God bless, and we'll see you next time.